Well, prisons aren't exactly known for being cozy. When most people picture incarceration, they don't imagine warm lighting, calmer living spaces, staff and residents interacting like human beings, or a unit designed intentionally to reduce violence instead of simply reacting to it. But that's exactly what's happening here in Pennsylvania inside a prison unit that's become something of a national curiosity. They call it Little Scandinavia, and depending on who you ask, it's either a bold reimagining of what prison could be, or an experiment that sounds too good to be true. So today we're not recording in a studio, we're recording inside the unit itself at SCI Chester, where the philosophy isn't control at all costs, but something closer to dignity, normalization, and dynamic security. And here's the twist. This isn't just a feel-good story. This is one of the rare cases in American corrections where innovation is being tested the right way through a randomized controlled trial where entry into the unit is determined by lottery, which means we're not here for hype, we're here for evidence. We're joined today by Dr. Jordan Hyatt, professor of criminology and justice studies at Drexel University and the lead investigator studying Little Scandinavia. He's tracking everything from misconducts and violence to staff well-being, and soon the outcome everyone is waiting for, recidivism. So the question isn't just whether Little Scandinavia feels different, the question is whether it works. Welcome to Pracademically Speaking.
Well, hello. Welcome to a new episode of Pracademically Speaking. I'm Brett Buckland, Director of Planning, Research, and Statistics at the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections and regular host on the podcast here. Today, I'm joined with Dr. Jordan Hyatt, Professor of Criminology and Justice Studies at Drexel University. Dr. Hyatt is the brains behind an innovative prison unit at the Department of Corrections called Little Scandinavia, and we're recording at Little Scandinavia on the unit today, so you'll hear some background noises in this episode. It's a very exciting episode and a conversation I've been honestly waiting to have for a long time. We'll talk about Little Scandinavia, what it is, what the philosophy behind it is, how we're researching it, and what the future holds for it. So Jordan, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here on behalf of the Scandinavian Prison Project, my co-lead, Sunniva Andersen at the University of Oslo, and the team of researchers that we have the privilege of working with here at SCI Chester.
I'm very excited about this episode. Honestly, for the last year, there were two episodes I wanted to do. The other one was the Pell experiment, which of course, you know, our colleague, Sarah Tomont, yep. She did that a couple months ago. And this was the other one. So those were the two episodes I was really excited to do. Obviously, Jordan, we go way back. We've mm-hmm. collaborated for, I don't know, over a decade.
We don't have to put that on the record. Because way more than a decade.
Yeah, long time. But we'd like to start out every episode with just hearing about the person behind the idea. Sure. So this was your brainchild, Little Scandinavia. But could you just tell us a little bit about how you got here in terms of your career? What your background and research interests are, how you got into corrections, and specifically how you landed on Little Scandinavia.
Sure. So a lot of this is a story of full circles. And so I had the opportunity all the way back when I was an undergraduate to spend some time living in Sweden. I was doing teaching at the time, and so became interested in kind of the way that the Nordic welfare model intersects with people's lives in an educational context. After I came back from Sweden, I ended up in law school and didn't really have the chance to lean very heavily into that side of my work, but that's where I picked up an interest in first sentencing and then corrections. And if we're being honest, that's where you and I first started collaborating a little bit longer than a decade ago. Yeah. But I was fortunate enough to carry both of those interests forward until I was doing my PhD at the University of Pennsylvania, working with Dr. Larry Sherman, who got me involved in some aspects of the Stockholm Prize. So then I had the opportunity to return to Sweden and start to build out some professional relationships in a very kind of applied context. And included in that group, I met Dr. Andersen, now at the University of Oslo, and the two of us planned what first started as an experiential learning program for undergraduates, bringing students to Sweden and to Norway to understand what the prison systems looked like, how they were actually put into practice, and help them kind of maybe refocus some of their thinking as they went forward in their own careers. Over time, after doing a few research projects with you here in Pennsylvania and a few in Scandinavia as well, we were able to bring everybody together back in 2018. And so Dr. Andersen and I came to the DOC along with partners from the Swedish public broadcaster and other places and said, hey, what if we tried what we're doing with students with correctional officers? What if we tried to understand what they could take away from that kind of an experience? And so that is when the first cohort of prison officers traveled from here in Philadelphia over to Norway in the summer of 2019. And because we are not just kind of focused on the policy side of things, we are very much researchers. We were fortunate enough to bring together the applied research, the practical changes here in the institution, and then, you know, letting the COs kind of drive that change based on their experiential learning over in Scandinavia. So again, it really is, for me personally and for the project as a whole, a story of almost ending up back where you started, just with a bigger group of folks on board.
Yeah, and the research part I'll talk about, because this is a podcast that really tries to focus on the research behind the ideas. And I know firsthand that you are first and foremost a researcher, so we're all interested in the objective outcomes from Little Scandinavia. But before we get to that, what is Little Scandinavia, or the Scandinavia Prison Project? What kind of, what's the philosophy behind it? What is the core of this unit that we're sitting on? What makes it different from a regular prison unit?
Sure. It's hard to overstate how different this unit is from the general population housing units here at Chester and from the standard conditions of confinement across Pennsylvania. So the way that the project is conceived is that it is a single housing unit, just one of the 14 here at Chester, where the correctional officers, the frontline staff, had the opportunity to go abroad and rethink several important aspects of what it means to work in corrections. So the first was the built environment. How is the unit constructed? What is the layout of the space? How do people kind of go about their daily lives in the area where they spend most of their time? And the other part is the role of a correctional officer. What is the training? What is the obligations? What are the expectations of American staff working with a perhaps more Scandinavian bend to the way they do their jobs? And what's important for the way that this project was conceived is that it is not a top-down initiative. It's not that we took leaders and bosses and said, look how different things could be, go home and make these changes, force other people to do things differently. Instead, we travel with a group of frontline officers, and they were the ones who proposed a lot of the things that you, when you look around this unit here, you can actually see. So, you know, we really tried to empower correctional staff to rethink their role and rethink the prison environment based on their time abroad. And so that was, again, the initial engagement back in 2019. We tried to help those staff with support of our partners in the Norwegian Correctional Service and the Swedish Prison and Probation Service, see how things could be different. Back then, there weren't a lot of other projects working in this space, especially focusing on a single housing unit. And so the time abroad really became the counterfactual, right? The way that things could be different, not in an abstract kind of read it in a book or hear it from you or me or somebody else, but rather hear it from their peers and see how they did their jobs. And so that process started back in 2020, a little bit of a delay due to the pandemic, but it culminated in the unit opening in May of 2022.
And I understand that it's based on a principle of normalization. Say just a minute about that. What is the principle of normalization? And
sure.
That's a foundation, I think, for this unit and the philosophy behind it, right?
Absolutely. I mean, this guides so much of what happens in Scandinavian prisons, and it's what they have tried to adapt here in Pennsylvania. So the idea is essentially that life inside of prison should be as similar as possible to life outside of the prison, with the exception of the deprivation of liberty. And obviously there are always going to be adaptations because prison is different, but it's an effort to close that gap in meaningful ways for people who both live and work in prison, and in doing so, change the fundamental nature of the interactions between staff and incarcerated people, and also among incarcerated people.
Okay, so let's get to the focus of the podcast on the nexus between the research and the practitioner, the real world. Mm-hmm. So I want to talk about the research that's being done on the Scandinavian Prison Project here. One of the most unique aspects of this project is that it's being evaluated through a randomized controlled trial, which we talk a lot about on this podcast. Why was this research design so important? And what does it allow us to say about the impact through the study?
Sure. When you think about a general population adult housing unit, there really wasn't a precedent that we could look to help us understand what we might expect in terms of behavioral change, in terms of violence, or even what might be possible. So when we started the project, it was important that this is not an honor block. It's not an earned privilege unit, right? The people who are on this unit are both practically and statistically not different from the other folks in general population. If this were an honor block and the men needed years of good behavior to make it to this space, it wouldn't really be useful to prove that they behave better. They'd already shown that they could behave better, that they could follow the rules of the institution. So by drawing from the general population, and the department certainly took a risk in allowing this to move forward, but it does provide really important and robust data, it allows us to say that if you hold the population constant, but change the environment and change the way the staff are empowered and the way the staff do their job, that can have a meaningful impact on the community. And so that is why this is designed as a lottery, where individuals who move to this particular unit are selected from the general population at the facility using a lottery, where everybody who is eligible has an equal chance of being picked. And all the usual ways that people in prison end up in programming, whether it's who you know or who's next up on the list, that falls away in support of being able to draw meaningful conclusions about what this unit could potentially do in terms of the outcomes that are important, both in the prison and eventually in community.
And so the idea is differentiating this from an honor unit where you hand select kind of well-behaved individuals who are already on the path of success, have a propensity for success. This is drawing from the general population randomly by lottery, and hopefully can be applicable to the whole population rather than a select group of individuals that are handpicked.
Exactly. Yeah. It sets a really strong evidence-based floor of what is possible. And from here, there are a bunch of different opportunities in terms of adaptation and expansion, but I think what the data are showing so far is that this is possible, that this is a reasonable and not disastrous way to run a general population housing unit. And if there wasn't a lottery, we would be open to criticisms of bias and selection and things like that. And we outsourced the lottery, even outside of our research team, outside of the facility staff, specifically to make that a very kind of strong and defensible part of the research design.
Okay, we're gonna take a quick break, and then we're gonna jump into what we have learned so far about from the research. And so we'll be right back on Pracademically Speaking.
You're listening to Pracademically Speaking, a production of the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections. Please share or cite any of the guests or content you hear on this podcast, but do not alter the audio in any way. Check for resources or publications mentioned in this episode in the show notes. Now, back to the host.
We're back here at SCI Chester speaking with Dr. Jordan Hyatt about the innovative Little Scandinavia unit. And we're about to jump into now what the research is showing us so far. I had hoped that by the time we recorded this that we'd have full recidivism results. Obviously, we're waiting with bated breath for hopefully this summer to get some indication at least of what the recidivism outcomes are, maybe a little bit longer than that. But at least, as I understand it, we have some preliminary results from outcomes that are happening inside prison right now here at SCI Chester in terms of misconducts, well-being, things that are happening immediately before these guys get out. And so talk to me a little bit about what we're learning so far from the research that you've been doing.
Like every RCT, you can only have outcome data when the sample has matured and had time to kind of engage in whatever behavior you're looking for. And one of the things that we do in order to support the kinds of conclusions that we need and want to draw is that we stratify the lottery based on how much time people have until they're potentially eligible to be released from the institution. And in a discretionary release jurisdiction like Pennsylvania, that's a little bit of uncertainty on top of, a need to make sure that the group here looks like the facility as a whole, again, supporting that claim of generalizability. And so it will take a little bit more time for folks to spend meaningful amounts of time on this unit and then be released into the community, hence the kind of delay in the recidivism measures. But I think it's also important to remember the goal of this project. And while public safety is important and recidivism is important, it's also really important that we remember that what happens in prison impacts the staff and the incarcerated people on a daily basis. Staff deserve a working environment that is safe and not damaging to them. And incarcerated people, both from the Scandinavian model and from others in the US, have argued that people who are in prison deserve a little bit more dignity in the way that they live out their lives. And so a lot of our effort has really been focused on understanding that day-to-day living here in the prison and how it's different than what folks experienced before and what it looks like across the rest of the state. And so we do that from a number of different ways. And I think one of the most useful and interesting ways we've tried to understand the prison climate on this unit and in this institution is by surveying the entire population. And so over the past few years, every few months, we survey every single incarcerated person here. We go door to door and we give them a survey. It's a rather long survey developed in the Netherlands that we adapted and validated here in Pennsylvania. And it tells us things about people's day-to-day experiences that you don't always see reflected in administrative data. Again, one of the common limitations of many RCTs. So we have data on people's quality of life, how they view their relationships, not only how much violence there is as measured by assaults or things like that, but how safe the incarcerated people here feel. And that, you know, there's a growing body of research, matters in some ways more to these groups than the actual like rate of violence or the propensity to be assaulted or things like that. And so we can look at the survey data that we've been gathering, again, for years and years, and when we aggregate it up, you can see that the prison climate on Little Scandinavia, when compared to the responses that we get from the general population, in a descriptive way, are really encouraging. The residents on this unit report higher levels of procedural justice and how they deal with the system as a whole. And they also report much more positive relationships between the staff on this unit as compared to relationships reported elsewhere in the institution. We also see the same men reporting that their relationships among the group of incarcerated folks on this unit are much more positive. Again, remembering that these people all came from general population and there's nothing distinctly more friendly about them, right? It's something about the community here that has allowed them to form a different kind of dynamic. And that in turn translates to higher levels of self-reported safety, and people report that they sleep better. Things, again, that we don't see in administrative data, but very much characterize the day-to-day life here inside the institution.
But you have looked at some administrative data, too.
Absolutely.
And what have you seen so far from that on things like misconducts, assaults, things like that?
So the first thing, I think, and this is increasingly important from a kind of facility management perspective, is that there has only been one formal response to an incident on this unit over the nearly 4 years that it's been in operation. And having the opportunity to work with the leadership here, that's not the case kind of facility-wide. But decomposing that a little bit more, looking at the individual level recidivism data, we can see that there is a reduced number of misconducts on this unit, and the severity of those misconducts is lesser than observed across the rest of the general population here at Chester. That, of course, correlates with less use of the restricted housing unit, so less use of isolation, which has a high human and economic cost both to the system as a whole and both the staff and the incarcerated people. And that also is reflected in what we see from the staff. You know, this is a project that really tries to center almost equally the experience of these two key stakeholders, recognizing that they are more intrinsically linked than perhaps the research out there would suggest. If you spend any time inside, this is very intuitive, but from the outside, we often see these groups as adversarial. And so what we're seeing in our work in talking to the officers who've both been abroad and worked on this unit is that they report higher levels of job satisfaction, they report higher levels of well-being, and they feel more positively engaged in the work that they're doing, both as an officer and with the individual residents with whom they're interacting. So we're seeing really positive signals in the descriptive data, generally trending in favor of the nature of the climate here being distinctly different and in a positive way than the general population here at the institution.
What has there been anything that has surprised you in the research so far? I know when I got involved first in this project, I was thinking more about the residents and outcomes like recidivism, and I wasn't thinking about, for instance, staff coming to work and having a better environment to work at. So that's been a surprise to me to learn about that. Are there things that you didn't expect to find or surprising findings so far in
Yeah, absolutely. Research? I mean, I think the thing that has surprised me the most is the nature of this community. And this is borne out in the data, right? We interview the staff, we survey the staff in a very similar way as we do with the incarcerated population. And we're seeing surprising convergences in the things that they worry about on a day-to-day basis, both in terms of, you know, the built environment, right? Things like noise affect everybody in uniquely negative ways. And when it's loud for the residents, it's loud for the staff. And so that's, I think, a pretty clean example of how, again, interconnected those groups can be. And so it's a situation where perhaps these groups are not working against each other, but rather this is a way to reframe our efforts to reform prison that benefits both of the groups, the people who work in prison and the people who live in prison. And it's not either or. This is maybe a way to do both.
Okay. So landing the plane on what you've learned so far with the research, what are some of the key takeaways that you would impart on policymakers in terms of Little Scandinavia, the philosophy? And with that, too, I'd like to hear how you would respond to the skeptic, because this unit tends to draw strong opinions on either side. Either people love it or they're very pessimistic about it.
Yeah.
And so I think there's a lot of misconceptions around what it is. Some skeptics, obviously some people that really are strong supporters of it. But what would you say to policymakers based on the research that you've done and specifically to people who are kind of skeptical about this model?
So prisons are inherently resistant to change, right? I think if you roll back 20, 30, 40 years, the core principles of corrections haven't changed all that much. Technology has changed, maybe some of the layouts of facilities, but the general way that corrections works hasn't changed all that much. And I think this shows, and other projects like it, that change is possible, right? It is not unrealistic to think that we can take big swings and do dramatic things inside, and it doesn't have to devolve into chaos and violence and, you know, the kinds of things that skeptics are rightly concerned about. We have years of data now. The fact that we're sitting here, you know, just having this conversation in this space suggests that it is possible to build a community-based housing unit that is different. So I think that is by far the key takeaway. The other one is that while construction is expensive, and especially when you're trying to retrofit a prison that wasn't built to do this, finding ways to infuse human dignity and humanity is potentially free. If you look at Scandinavia, we often think that all of their prisons are brand new and built to spec, but that's not true. There are some very old prisons in Scandinavia, but the same ideas of normality that we talked about earlier, you can find them there too. So it's not just that you can only do this in a brand new prison, and if you don't have state-of-the-art facilities, then you don't need to worry about this. That's not the case at all. And we've also seen in comparing Scandinavia to what's happening here at Chester and some of the other, you know, folks we've been privileged to work with, that some aspects are universal in terms of incarceration. We've seen, for example, survey responses from incarcerated populations here in Pennsylvania that look pretty similar to the same responses you get from incarcerated populations in Europe, in the Netherlands, and other places. So there's something almost universal about incarceration, and we can capitalize on that. We can look at the similarities and differences, and in doing those exercises, find little pockets that are susceptible to change, and we can find models of doing things a little bit differently. Again, I think the other piece is the intrinsically linked nature of the staff and the incarcerated population. I think this unit, this community-based kind of management style, really speaks to that potential in a way that there's now data to back it up. And I think it's important to remember that a lot of what we see here were changes proposed by frontline correctional officers who had a unique experiential learning opportunity, and they were the ones who brought it home with them. So we can empower COs to rethink their job, to rethink their environment, and if they are given support and the opportunity to really make a change, they can be the leaders in kind of reshaping their own day-to-day experience, and in doing so, change the nature of incarceration for people who are serving a sentence.
Okay, so as we wrap up, what's the future of the Scandinavian Prison Project? Both here in Pennsylvania, with expansion, the model across the country, and just a minute on what else we want to learn from research. Obviously, we're waiting for the recidivism results, but what else do we need to learn about this? Where's the future of this going?
So under the leadership of Secretary Laurel Harry, we are incredibly fortunate to be in a position where, working with our colleagues in the Department of Corrections, we're thinking about what comes next. Yes, we're still waiting for the recidivism results, but I think what we're seeing on this unit, particularly in terms of staff well-being, really matters and is very much in line with the department's priorities. And so about a year or so, she announced that the project would be looking to rethink housing units in three very different kinds of facilities within the state. So we are now working at SCI Fayette, a maximum security facility, SCI Smithfield, a facility on the western side of the state, very similar to Chester, and SCI Cambridge Springs, an all-female facility in the northwest part of the state. And I think to your point about expansion and what we can learn, this presents an incredibly exciting opportunity to test two things. So one is, how flexible and how adaptable is this model, right? Each of those facilities, and this speaks to her vision, I think, is very, very different than Chester, both in terms of the population of incarcerated people, the standing staff complement, the
culture kind of the facility.
Exactly, yep. Right? And just the buildings themselves. Some of them are campuses. Yep. Some of them are much, much larger. So it gives us an opportunity to rethink what adaptation means. And while here at Chester, they only had the Scandinavian model, looking back on their time in Sweden and their time in Norway as the kind of well from which they could draw inspiration, now the folks at the expansion sites have both their Scandinavian partners with whom we can continue to collaborate, but also they have years of, you know, data and policy and experience here at SCI Chester, both in the leadership at the institution under Superintendent Clark, and also the staff working on this unit, some of whom have been here always since 2019, which is pretty rare in corrections. And so I'm really interested, along with, you know, Suniva and the other folks on our team, to see what that process looks like, and we are very privileged to be able to work with them in rethinking the policy. So we're really fortunate enough to work with Sarah Tamont at the University of Maryland on a multi-site randomized control trial that she'll be leading, which will give us the opportunity as a collective, though independent, to dig a little bit deeper into the staff well-being side and their potential impact on outcomes, both on the unit and on their career trajectories. And at the same time, providing kind of a broader based understanding of what it means to live on these units as they are adapted for all of the different institutions that'll be a part of this project going forward.
You're wired like me. I have a million other research questions, but we have to end here. That only means that we're gonna come back, hopefully do the next one, maybe at the Little Scandinavia expansion at Fayette or Smithfield or Cambridge Springs. We'll have more research at that time, and we can talk about what we're continuing to learn from this exciting project. But Jordan, thanks for being on today, and we'll talk again soon.
Absolutely. And on behalf of the project, thanks for having us.
Thanks for listening. Check out Pracademically Speaking wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. This is the conversation where ideas and numbers get real, on the ground and in practice. Pracademically Speaking is a production of the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections.